This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to The Journey. I'm your host, Chris DeMakes. And this is where I pick the brains of your favorite musicians about their musical paths, from the very beginning and throughout the years, up until the present. How they got from point A to point B, from their earliest musical memories, that very first song they remember hearing, to who influenced and inspired them. The moment they knew they wanted to be a performer, what led them to their instrument of choice, embarrassing first recordings, performances, and everything in between. When they fully realized this was a pure, unadulterated passion, way more than just a fleeting hobby or something they enjoyed in passing. We go deep and get the inside scoop of how, why, and when this all began. No two stories are the same, each unique to the individuals telling them, and everyone as fascinating as the next. So join me now as we embark on another journey. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Journey. And today we are joined by my good friend and bassist for Less Than Jake, Roger Lima. How's it going, Roger?
It's going good. That's me. How's it going?
Going fantastic. You are the last but not least guy in the band that we're going to do here on The Journey. I've talked to everybody else. So take us back, man. Like, you know, I probably know out of anybody in
the band
probably about your story. I feel like we've talked a lot, but there's still things that I don't know that I'm curious about. So take us back to, like, and I don't know this, what is your first your first musical memory, like your first time where, like, something got you dancing at a wedding or nursery rhyme, cartoon, something?
I honestly couldn't tell you, man. I really couldn't tell you. I've just been around music and doing music, and it's just been everywhere, like my whole life. So it's really hard for me to, like, pin something down. I mean, I remember being, like, you know, 4 years old and my uncle's band is practicing, you know what I mean? And I remember being, like, 6 years old and hearing a song and instantly, like, realizing that it had some connection to me, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's like, as far as listening to it or dancing, it's like, my family's Brazilian. Like, there was always music on, everyone was always dancing. It was just part of life in such a big way for me growing up.
Well, that's kind of what I want to talk to you about, because you mentioned being Brazilian. And, you know, you were exposed, I know your grandma and grandpa, your mother's parents, were playing a lot of traditional Brazilian music. And then, of course, you're hearing rock and roll on your uncle's side. And you were born in Tampa. You weren't born in Brazil. But your family, you were kind of exposed to very, very different styles of music. And I guess you said one of your earliest memories was your uncle. Do you remember seeing his band play live?
I don't remember seeing them play until maybe when I was, like, a teenager, like, much later. But, you know, they were always around. The guys were always around. My uncle lived with us for a while, and the drums were, like, in the house for a long time when I was, like, really little. So it just was something that I was just really used to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I didn't see him play until a little later.
And when you saw, or when you... Okay, we're listening to music, or do you remember seeing anything, I guess maybe MTV or earlier than that, maybe something on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, where you're like, I want to be a drummer, or I want to be a guitarist, or I want to be a singer?
Yeah, not really. I wasn't really, like, you know, exposed to, like, some visual thing that made me want to be a musician. Like, it was just always, like, about the music. I mean, my real dad is supposedly a guitar player. My uncle was a drummer. There was, like, drums in the house growing up. So it was just kind of like, instruments were around. I don't know how to explain it. It was just always around and always music getting played and stuff. And I, you know, shout out to my mom for always having music going on.
Right. Well, you talked about, like, your biological father. Did anybody on his side of the family have any musical aspirations, or were they musicians?
Not that I know of. I mean, he had a bunch of brothers. I think some of them might have played guitar or something, but I don't really know.
Okay, but your uncle, who is your mom's brother, so I would say it's on your mom's side of the family. Your mom loves music. Your sister plays the drums, so it seems like it may have been that side of the family you got all this from.
Yeah, man, for sure. It was just always around, and you know, I just remember, like, learning drum beats at a really young age, and then you know, just kind of always singing and, you know, just, and then I remember like, you know, singing in church and getting like kind of called out and being like, hey, you know, we'd like you, you want to sing the solo part in church? So, you know, like, I was pretty little. So stuff like that. And then, you know, getting into piano lessons for a lot of years as a little kid. So stuff like that.
When did you know? Because it was pretty early on for me, and I didn't really put two and two together that I was good at it. I just kind of, you know, could hear things. When did you notice, like, you were punching a key on a piano and you could immediately go to the note with your voice when other kids maybe couldn't?
Honestly, when I started taking piano lessons, my thing was always like, I just wanted my teacher to just play the thing for me so I could just hear it. And then from hearing it, I could fiddle around until I found the notes that were the right notes for whatever she was playing. I didn't necessarily want to do the sight reading. I just wanted to like hear it. And then I could just kind of, I just knew that I could hear it again in my head and like figure it out on the piano that way. So I think around that time, I was probably what, like maybe 8 or 9 or something when I was doing piano, started piano lessons. I was pretty little.
And what do you feel? Because not many of my punk rocker friends, and actually JR, you know, went to music school and you had studied music. I never studied it. I played piano for a little bit. But again, I just wanted to play. I didn't really want to hear anything behind theory and anything. But do you feel any of that helped you, some of that theory stuff early on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, just learning stuff like the cadence between notes and, you know, the kind of math behind the rhythm of things. Behind, you know, like the way that music is written. And yeah, I think it helps like kind of tune up what fit and what doesn't fit, you know, as far as like the way that classical music and major minor scales and demented chords and like all those cadences and all that stuff, like definitely like gave me an early edge going into, because, you know, I went to like Catholic school until 7th grade. Mm-hmm. And there was only, the only music that was going on there was singing in church. There wasn't like a quote unquote music class. You know what I mean? There was no instruments or anything. So then, you know, later on, like my mom got remarried and then we like moved and stuff. And I went to a public school and they had like, it was like, oh, you could take music as an elective. And that's, I was already like 12 at this, maybe 13 at this point. Right. And that really changed the game for me because it put me in a room with other kids that were playing music that I hadn't really done that before.
Now, was this jazz band? Because I know you were playing, was this when you started playing the viola?
It is. And it's funny because like, it was like, oh, okay, you want to take a music course? Okay, I'll take a music course. And it's like, okay, well, there's jazz band or orchestra. And it's like, okay, well, I want to play drums. And they were like, oh, well, they already have too many drummers, so you can't do that. So, okay, so well, what else is in there? And it was like, you know, horns and stuff. And I was like, I'll go to the orchestra. And I didn't really even know what I was getting myself into with the orchestra, but I ended up doing it for 3 years.
Well, hold on. So I was going to ask you, like, I kind of did earlier, like, what was the instrument you wanted to play? But, you know, if I were to pick one for you, it'd be drums. You're always, that's the first instrument you go to in a room. You're always tinkering with the drums. You've always been that way. So you wanted to be the drummer. They didn't have a position for you. So they're like, okay, don't want to be a horn player. I'll go over here. And when you picked up I've never even tried to play a viola. Like, it's like a violin, essentially. What was that like?
Well, you know, what's funny, again, when I first got into that class, now here comes the shout outs, right? So my teacher was amazing in my orchestra class. I started on the upright bass and I played that for like maybe like half of the first year. And it was all right, but she really needed someone to play in the viola section. Was kind of like, nobody wanted to play. It's kind of an oddball instrument. It's like, you know, you're not like doing any of the cool solos, like the violins, and the cello is just like a kind of a cool, almost like sexy instrument. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, it's like amazing sounding. And the viola is kind of like the B-side, kind of like a support slot kind of thing. But, you know, I got talked into it. So, you know, I switched over to viola and, I don't know, man, I just, there was something about that teacher, to be completely honest with you. Like, she really like brought stuff out of me and encouraged me in ways that like, I didn't like understand how it was like forming me for the rest of my life. Like, she was such an amazing teacher that there's no way I would be where I'm at without her. Because she really pushed me and like gave me opportunities. And Angel Vassell was like, she was like the biggest deal for me, man. She was amazing.
You've talked about her a lot to me over the years. A lot. And, but at the same time, I mean, I had teachers that were really cool, that were really into history and wanted to teach. But I just didn't want to learn about that. I wanted to learn about music. So you obviously love music. You got in there and you had someone that just was able to tap into that with you and really hone it in. And it seems like you gravitated towards her.
Yeah, man, she was amazing. She just, besides being sort of supportive and kind of encouraging of me using my like sort of natural talents in my ear and stuff, she was just giving me an opportunity to be like, oh, we're going to do this song, but this song really needs like a drum part. And she would be like, Raj, you're playing the drum part. Get some drums in here and you're playing the drum part. You know, we're going to play the full orchestra, but you're the solo drummer thing. And I'm like, it wasn't anything complicated, but it was cool. I got to do it. And then the really major thing that happened is I was 14 or 15 and my teacher gave me an acoustic guitar. She was like, take this home and tinker with it. I think you'll like it. And that was the first time that I ever like really had a guitar.
And how old were you?
I think I was 14, maybe 15.
Okay. But by this time, you're into Maiden and Descendants and stuff by then, right? Or was that a little later?
Not Descendants yet, but Maiden for sure. Yeah. I was kind of brought up on good classic rock kind of stuff, you know, and Maiden, AC/DC, Aerosmith, like that strain of stuff. So, but I was super into it, but like Descendants is a little later. I was probably 16 when I got a Descendants cassette. Yeah, it was a little later.
The reason I asked about the rock and roll was in like the heavy metal was because, you know, here you are. I look back at these pictures of your mom around 13. She posts online and there you are in your suit and tie with a viola. But like, at what point did the rock and roll bug you? I know early on your uncle's band, but at what point you're like, okay, you saw something on MTV or that moment?
You got to understand, I was going to those orchestra classes wearing a jean jacket with Iron Maiden back patch that was with patches all over my jean jacket. I was like a full metalhead when I was in seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, but I was in the orchestra.
Yeah.
My friends were the dudes that listened to Metallica and like listened to Anthrax and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I was a metalhead like on the outside, but I was in the orchestra.
Who was the first guy you talked to? Was it at lunch? Where was it where you're like, hey man, I play guitar, and he's like, I play drums, and you got something together. The first time you ever jam with somebody else.
Oh man. Well, you know, I had this one friend throughout that time that played guitar. His name was Brandon, and we probably fooled around playing guitar together before I actually like sort of had a band. Or I'm kind of cloudy on that, actually. It's weird. But it was it's going to be this guy, Richard Rippey, who's a bass player that I met at like around the scene of musicians. He didn't go to my school, but I somehow met him. And we started having our moms drive us around and drop us off so we could hang out and play guitar and bass together. And I was definitely 15 around that time. And that was the first time I heard like Fugazi. He was the guy that exposed me to like a lot of that sort of DC stuff. Like that was like sort of, I would say Fugazi was like the main influence for like my first band.
And are you speaking of Disposition, the first band?
Yeah, my first rock band that I had was called Disposition. Yeah, it was.
I've heard the cassette. Do you still have the cassette?
I probably have it on a shelf somewhere. Yeah, there's like, we actually like, you know, I was a guitar player, singer, and we had a little band, and we did one 4-song recording in a terrible little studio. It was great.
I kind of talked about this a moment ago where I said, you know, when did you like realize you were hearing things other kids weren't hearing? And did you remember ever driving anybody crazy with your ear? Like some of those first Disposition where you're like, you're out of tune to the bass player. He's like, what are you talking about? Because I was always that guy until I met you. And when I met you, you upped my game because you were like telling me I was sharp and flat. I'm like, I'm going, no, that sounds fine to me. And you were starting to hone me in. So do you ever remember, do you remember that happening? Because I remember people being frustrated with me.
Well, it was a different situation for sure, because it was like, I was the guitar player, singer, and the bass player didn't really sing. Just did a couple of shouts here and there. And the drummer was good, but they were kind of holding it down. And I was just sort of like being loud on top of that. So there wasn't any, like, I didn't have someone else to sing with, you know, nothing to compare it to. So it was probably, I was probably out of tune too. Who knows? But, you know, the funny thing is like, I had like a terrible garbage guitar that it was like, I think I paid $32 for it from a kid around the corner. It was like a Harmony Electric. It was terrible. It would never stay in tune. It was clunky to play. So every time my band Disposition had a show, I would borrow gear from like friends or something. Like I never had like a decent guitar that whole time.
Well,
it was great.
And I must interject right here and say that your mom's father, your grandfather, who's sadly no longer with us, he was the master mechanic, master carpenter, building things. He taught you all this stuff. So, you know, you were always, from the moment we met, and we'll get into this in a little bit, when you first joined Less Than Jake. I mean, this guy basically took a car stereo speaker and made his first bass cabinet, you know, out of which
oh, man.
Which you were always, when you were talking about that a moment ago, you reminded me of all the stuff you're always tinkering with things, which is probably why you own a studio. But what was the first concert you saw?
I have to say that my first real concert was a U2 concert at the Orange Bowl in Miami, and it was the Joshua Tree tour. Is that 82 or 83? Like it's somewhere early like that, somewhere in that time frame, I think.
Joshua Tree is around 87.
Oh no, then that's not the right one. But I remember seeing Joshua Tree in the stadium. So that was U2 in the stadium. That's pretty early on. I don't remember what else big like that I saw, you know?
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
And now was Disposition, I mean, you were kids, you couldn't get into bars. Like where were you playing? Did you play at friends' garages or something? Or
so like in that scene, there was stuff like people would have like house shows on their tennis court or something, like in their backyard, if their parents would let them have a party. There was like a warehouse that was sort of like a venue, but it was just like in a warehouse somewhere. And it was like not legit at all, but they had shows like every weekend there. That was kind of a weird place. There's a couple small venues that we played. We probably only played like 10 shows, 8 shows total in high school, you know?
Right. And did that band last you all through high school, or did like you stopped in your junior year and didn't have another band, or did that take you all the way up until you left for UF for college?
No, it kind of fizzled. It didn't, I wasn't even really doing it too intensely, you know, like in my senior year. I feel like it was kind of like mid high school for me. Mm-hmm. And then I was just kind of playing. I just kind of kept playing guitar and kept just getting my chops up, learning metal songs and just like different kinds of music and just picking stuff off the radio and learning how to play it. And I just kind of always just kept playing guitar, but we didn't really do anything. We weren't really trying to do anything serious, you know?
So you find out you got accepted to the University of Florida. And do you recall the months leading up to that when you found out? Do you recall saying to yourself, and I've never asked you this question, I have no idea what you're going to say, I'm going to get a band together in Gainesville, or I'm going to, you know, that's where I'm going to find some people to play with.
You know, I don't really think that I was looking at that phase in my life, man. Like, I was a senior and I was, you know, getting really good grades. I was kind of getting serious about studying chemistry and science, and I was like digging the math and stuff. And I kind of was okay to be like in college mode. And I really wasn't expecting or predicting or planning anything. I just played guitar.
Well, I'm maybe overstepping my bounds here, but you didn't stay in college mode for long.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
I met you pretty much right when you got there, buddy. And we were jamming all the time, get the acoustics out. And
I know, man, it's just, that's just the way it rolled. I mean, I was only in Gainesville for what, like four months before I met you. So it's just the way it was. You know, we just started playing and things started happening. Like, people started perking up and we were excited, and it was a different, stuff just happened. I don't know.
Well, and I always tell people, and people have heard the story here, I've told it before, how we met and how you got into the band. But, you know, a lot of times younger people will ask musicians, you know, how did you make it? How did you guys do this and that? And I say, man, you got to find the right people, you know, and you were driven, Vinny was driven, I was driven. And you know, you can't replace that drive and what that, obviously you have to have talent, but, you know, I feel like I hit the lottery in that aspect. Now it's January of 93. We finally ask you to join the band, but you don't even have a bass at this point. And
dude, I wasn't the bass player. I didn't understand that. Like, my sister was the bass player. My sister was the one with the bass and the bass amp. You know what I mean? Like, she could like rip through a bunch of Metallica songs, like on bass. Like, I was a guitar player. I never, like, it was, but it was a crazy moment. And it was kind of awesome though, because, like, you know, went to a pawn shop, got a bass, started tinkering with it. And then it was the same thing as before, where, you know, if I heard something, I could just pick it out. It didn't really matter if it was fast or quote unquote complicated or, you know, whatever. It was a big long bass run or something, because I came from that world of metal, of like, you know, like pretty serious guitar playing, you know, like those guys can rip, you know? So oh, I don't yeah. know. So it's just, you know, it's, playing bass was just like, oh, this is kind of like a mini guitar solo is the bass line in a way for me, and the kind of music that we were trying to play. So it just worked.
Well, Less Than Jake had existed just in name only, really, for like 6 months before you joined. We had another bass player. And, you know, remember saying to you, you know, you're like, but I play guitar. I'm like, I know, but we need a bassist. Because, like, we were into Screeching Weasel. We were into, like, Green Day, where it was just like, you know, basically, you know, Weasel had two guitar players, but it was the one guitar approach. You were like a three-piece. And finally, you reneged and said, okay, you go out, you buy this $50 bass. I think it was your car stereo speaker that you built a box around or something?
Yeah. So, like, yeah, my grandfather was like an electrician. He like taught me a lot of stuff. So even when I was in high school, like when I was like, oh, I'd love to have a monitor. That would be so cool to have like a monitor, to, like, put your foot on when you're playing guitar. And I didn't go buy one. I built one out of wood and put a speaker in it and had a slot on the side to plug in the cable and all that. And like, I just kind of did that again. It was like a big 15-inch speaker. And we just built like this cube that was like carpeted. It was totally like a bass system out of like a Miami car. That was the bass amp.
I can still see that rectangular head you had. What was that you were using?
Okay. So I think when we first started, I was just using this PV four channel, like PA head.
That's what it was.
I still have that thing, man. It's just like an old little mixer preamp, like amplifier, like PA head, like garbage.
Yeah, no, it was insane. And I bet if we were able to go back and be a fly on the wall during those first rehearsals, that bass rig probably sounded horrible, but I thought it sounded great. It made noise. It was perfect. And let's go back to that time, 93, 94. I mean, it's such a blur, because the band got going. I mean, when you got in the band, the whole thing changed, because you and I had already been kind of hanging out and we were harmonizing, you know, whatever, playing all kinds of songs together on acoustic guitars. You joined the band, and from that point, it just accelerated. We started going to Daytona. We started going to Jacksonville. We started going to Tampa to play. At what point do you remember going, man, there's something here. There's too many kids showing up. And now kids are asking me to sign their CD. This is, something's happening.
Yeah, it's definitely a blur for me, man. It was such a sort of like steady progression of that kind of stuff. We just kind of like, we built things up so like one brick at a time. I thought like it never just fell into our lap, like, you know, at 100 miles an hour, that it felt like this is like, okay, this is just what's supposed to be going on, because we're having fun. People are having fun, and we're, you know, slowly making a little bit more money every time. It's like slowly growing. And man, it's like we were playing ska at that time. Like it was like this thing that was just happening. So I was just on board. But I don't know. I think just when the whole major label thing started coming around a couple of years later, that's really when I thought that, you know, we had something going on that was beyond like driving around in a van. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it all these little things, and you used a great analogy. It was one brick at a time. It was literally one dorm mailbox on campus with a flyer in it at a time. It's just all those little things add up to what we had built in the band.
Yeah, man. It was just kind of slightly undeniable that when we would play a show and we would get that energy off the crowd, the way that we felt when we would go, when you and I would go see a show of a band that we loved. That's what it felt like, you know, we were getting that same kind of love back from the crowd. So it just felt good to keep doing.
I remember ripping away at the guitar, like on Pezcore, with just this reckless abandon and just going up to the mic and singing and be like, okay, that's a take. Let's go. We didn't have any money to record, and we were learning as we went. Do you recall? Cause I do recall it was during Losing Streak, and I don't know if it was you or it was Mike Rosen, but somebody said, you're singing ahead of the beat. You're singing too fast, you know? And I remember thinking, what are they talking about? I'm just doing my thing. Do you remember when you started to really critically listen in the studio?
A little bit. I remember that as well. You know, when we were cutting, Losing Streak is when, you know, things were a little bit under a bigger magnifying glass.
Yeah.
And we were like, we were in a room where it had kick-ass speakers and like the mics were amazing. Everything was amazing. You could really hear every little thing. And I remember like just catching a punch on a bass line or something and just, you know, really, really minutely laying something back just to make it fit the sort of unevenness. Cause that was no click track, but you know, the drums would kind of dip there for a little part or something. And I would kind of follow that and paying attention to that timing and following. But that's all stuff that comes from those years of orchestra and those, you know, all that stuff of like being a team player and like listening to the other people in the room while you're doing your thing and making it work out. Like it just felt sort of natural. But when we were doing that record is when, you know, as far as playing bass goes, for sure, is when I was kind of like, okay, like, you know, I'm kind of getting a handle on how to like lay this down with the right placement and stuff. Like
just placement.
Are you rushing a little on purpose so it pushes so it feels that way? Or are you holding it back a little bit so it drags, so it pockets and it feels that way, like that stuff?
Yeah. Well, I feel too, as a musician, you can only get better by the people you surround yourself with. And, you know, there was a time when I'd be up in front of the mic, you would say, you know, that was flat. And I know what flat means, but I didn't know how to correct it necessarily. And when you say that now, it's like we speak the same language. The next take, I'll do it, you know? It's so cool to be able to develop that language with people in a band. And as everybody knows out there that follows Less Than Jake, we have had going on, 3 decades now. It's 30 years as a band. What's the moment that stands out to you, man? Is there one?
I think, you know, being in front of a large crowd is in a momentous occasion in any musician's like life or career. So those massive shows that we've got to play, you know, and those huge festivals and those having that many faces in front of you dancing or jumping around, like those, that feeling of those huge shows is like, that's pretty incredible, man. You know, I mean, for me, like as a musician, just getting to have played the Reading Festival, you know, getting to have played a bunch of these festivals in Japan that we got to play, stuff like that, that's huge for me. And aside from that, you know, it's just the experiences that we've had, you know, making songs together and like how that is like a growing process.
Yeah.
And how we kind of continue to like figure out how we develop songs. And that's still my favorite thing about all of this. I love playing shows. I love working on other people's stuff, but just hanging out and coming up with songs that we think is cool is still the reason that I want to be a musician, because I still want to do more of that.
Yeah. And you've been very prolific. For the listeners that don't know, Roger's had a band for going on 20 years now called Rehasher. You guys have done what, 4 full length records?
Yeah. There's a bunch of records, bunch of singles. It's a good time.
Did a project with Jen from No More called Greenhorn. And of course, you have the Moat House studio that you've had for over 20 years now, and you're constantly recording bands. I think that is that's the fire that keeps you going. Yeah, you love the live shows, but it's being in the laboratory and creating that gets you moving.
Absolutely, man. It's there's a science to it. It's you got to put up your sleeves and do the ditch digging when it comes to songwriting. And that takes time, and that's I'm into that investment into like working on something for so long that what comes out the other side is great.
and lastly, do you ever feel like you've plateaued? Are you in a plateau now? Do you feel like you're constantly learning and constantly getting better?
I don't know, man. You know, last couple of years, I got to say, you know, with what's gone on with the world and everything, it's kind of slowed me down, to be honest. We haven't been playing as much, and we've been fortunate that we've had the shows we've had, and we've gotten to work together on some songs and stuff, but it's not like it used to be. So I feel like I'm waiting for something to happen, and then some sort of massive inspiration will come, and there'll be like a flood of music. But at the current moment, I'm just excited to get out on the road again and kind of like start building back up again after these kind of like weird 2-year hiatus that's happened, to be honest, you know.
Amen to that, man. I can't wait to get back out there myself. Well,
yeah, buddy.
Thanks for sitting with us today. And thanks to each and every one of you for tuning in to another episode of The Journey. We'll see you next time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.